You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Senses not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
You remember that old white album with the Beatles back in the late 60s when I was still sucking my thumb? Anyway, you remember the controversy on over some of the words? Sergeant Pepper's album too, the Lonely Hearts Band. Well, we got a little controversy on our opening song. Do you think that says mayonnaise or blood makes noise? Cast your vote at thecommonsenseshow.com. Anyway, this is Dave Hodges, and welcome to hour number two. And we even have controversy within our bumper music. So we're just filled with controversy. And thanks so much to John Shorey for that terrific hour of scriptural application to the modern times that we live in. And again, if you didn't catch that hour, you're going to want to go to his website at tribulationtruth.com. He's got two terrific books there, both tying around the book of Revelation, so you're going to want to order. Trust me, they're great reads, and they're not easy reads, but they're great reads. Anyway, this hour, we are blessed and pleased to be joined by an old friend of the show, been a guest on here many, many times. And I think he is the preeminent authority on what is often called technocracy, and we're going to talk about the progress of his book, Technocracy Rising. And, of course, you all know I'm talking about Mr. Patrick Wood of the August Review. Pat, thanks for joining us. Hello? Okay, let's go one for two. Katie, are you there?
I am here. What happened to him? He was here.
I don't know. I think we lost him. Here, let me.
Oh my goodness.
Let me make a little. Okay.
Well, no.
Okay.
What I'm wondering is, when was the last time it's been a while since he's been on.
We had Pat on, I think, sometime late summer, early fall, and then he got really busy with his book tour. So let's go to our producer here. I see that Pat is connected. We just can't hear him, so perhaps we should try to reconnect with him. So let's go ahead and do that. And then, Katie, while we're waiting to reconnect with Pat Wood, what's your reaction to what you heard in the last hour?
You know, when I listen to that, there's so many people out there writing books about the end times and interpreting Revelation. I have to just sort of sit back and let the Spirit interpret it. And I liked it felt like there was some truth in there. There was no conflict when I was listening. Does that make sense?
You could hear the conviction in his voice. And, you know, we developed truth detectors, you know, and my truth detector said, John Shorey is a guy that should be listened to, and he's worthy of our trust.
Yeah, and it didn't sound bombastic. It just sounded like it flowed with what you've been reporting.
Yeah, and I can be bombastic, so thanks to John for bringing us that balance. Let me do something here, Katie, here, and I'm going to send a number here.
Patrick.
Pat. Yeah. You know, and boy, we need to get him on quick because we got a lot of things to ask Pat Wood.
Well, anyway, while you're doing that, I was thinking I had a little trouble. I was going to say I've had a little trouble with Skype dragging, so I'm wondering if maybe a phone call would work better because the Skype's, I don't know about being interfered with, but it's dragging a little bit, so.
I am doing that as we speak.
Okay.
And my multitasking skills aren't very good. By the way, psychologists tell us there's no such thing as multitasking.
And, what's it called?
Well, actually, multitasking says that you can do more than one thing consciously. That's not the case. Your conscious mind that works off of what we call the straight line system or the SLS can only process one bit of information at a time. Now, the unconscious mind, that's a whole different story. And in fact, you can even experience split consciousness between the conscious and unconscious mind. For example, you're driving down the road and you're rocking out to our song, you know, Mayonnaise. So you're rocking out to the song and then you look back and said, holy cow, did I stop for that stop sign?
Yes.
What happened was your unconscious mind took over the operation of that automobile and your conscious mind was rocking out. Now, if someone pulled out in front of you, you'd revert right back to your conscious mind. Do we have Pat?
Yes, I hear him.
I'm back.
Oh, good, good. Okay, we were just stalling time here. We were talking about running stop signs and analyzing our theme song, but so now we can get down to business, Pat.
Now we can get down to business. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. That happens. Hey, listen, we've had a lot worse. We were going to interview Ammon Bundy. We lost both our satellites, our listen by phone, you name it, we lost it. So anyway, you have written a book called Technocracy Rising, and we talked to you in the kind of early days about that. And then you went on this fabulous book tour, and you were seemingly on 10 shows a day. Every time I'd turn on something, there was Pat Wood. And how's the book sales going, and how's it been received? Let's start there.
The book has been received extremely well. Book sales are never what they ought to be. It's disappointing that Americans just basically have given up on books. Not to say we haven't sold some books, because we have. And the people that have actually read it just can't say enough things about it. We've had 81 reviews on Amazon and a number in other places, and invariably they're 5-star reviews and, you know, incredible comments that people have made. And we've made a lot of contacts and a lot of good, you know, networking associations and stuff over time. So, you know, still moving ahead, Dave. We've got to get this word out. And the website that I started late last fall, and, well, it's almost winter, I guess, in November, called technocracy.news, has been doing extremely well. And I'm very pleased with that. And I've basically been so pleased that I rolled everything over into that single website now, including book sales and other information about Technocracy Rising, into technocracy.news. And it's pretty consistently now pulling in excess of 50,000 visitors, unique visitors a month, and still growing. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be a major organ to, you know, relate people to this concept of technocracy.
And you've got your newsletter. I know I get that.
And, indeed. Yes, stuff. That goes out every time when there's something interesting on the website. The newsletter goes out automatically to readers. And, you know, we just push forward. We can't sit back, as you know. Things are moving too quickly. And at this point, it's what was it like the old Clint Eastwood movie, The Quick and the Dead, right?
Yes, sir.
We got to be quick today. So...
Easier said than done at my age.
Indeed.
I used to be timed with a stopwatch. Now you can time me with a calendar, but I know what you're talking about with decision-making. And by the way, I want to give you credit where credit's due. For those of you, I think we're up to 29,000, those of you that subscribe to the Common Sense Show newsletter, Pat Wood was the guy that set it up for me. So did a fabulous job on there. And so, Pat, again, publicly, thank you so much for doing that. And I wish you similar success with your newsletter. And if there's anything we can do to help you promote, certainly don't hesitate to call upon us, because I want to promote your work. And let's get down to what your work is. We are in very dire times right now, economically, militarily, politically, socially. I mean, it's just like chaos is the word of the day in so many venues. How does this chaos that we're seeing right now, how does this relate to the world of technocracy? How does it enter in?
I know. There's kind of a two-tiered thing going on in the world today. There's the whole sidecar show of politics, right, with national, you know, the debates and, you know, is it going to be Trump? Is it going to be, you know, Hillary, whatever? And there's the political sideshow going on, which I think is just basically... you know, useless and immaterial. But behind that, there's this whole plethora of technocrats that are operating within the government of this country, within the administrative branch, especially this country, and other countries around the world as well that are in coordination with each other to establish a brand new economic system in the world. It's never been tried before. It's never been tested even. It hasn't been written about very much by serious economists either, hardly at all. And technocracy as a replacement economic system has been declared pointedly by the United Nations. It's been declared by people in our country. Nobody's listening basically to this, but the chaos that we see in the world today is a direct result of these two economic systems duking it out in the international space. That is, technocracy on one hand and capitalism and free enterprise on the other hand. And I might add, it's a fight to the death. One's going to die, and one's going to live, and that's unfortunately just going to be the way it is.
The technocracy aspect of it, is that what's pushing the move for the banks to go towards a cashless society?
Very much a part of it. And, you know, the banks, the global banking system right now has basically declared a war on cash. Now, that's not the only thing. But you see, it's important to drive everybody to digital, to the digital world, so that they can be tracked and monitored, sliced and diced, you know, for marketing purposes and so on. And, you know, we see the attack picking up on this. And there was just an article this week about, you know, the cashless future is coming and the banks are talking about this. And as more and more central banks move to negative interest rates, this call for a cashless society will be even greater, in my opinion, because once they get all the money in the banks, they can continue to use negative interest rates to give everybody a haircut, so to speak. A little trim around the ears, please. And not too long ago, somebody that you might recognize by name, Jeremy Rifkin, he's a futurist, economist, he's advisor to the global elite. He's been around for a long time. I call him a technocrat because he acts, thinks, and, you know, moves like a technocrat. But he said back in, it was 2006, I believe, nobody listened to him much at that point. He said that another financial crash could destroy capitalism and bring in what he called this radical new economic system, which is technocracy. And the United Nations said as much last year as well, that they're going to replace capitalism and free enterprise with what they call their green economy. That is the same thing as technocracy, by the way. So the global elite have declared their purposes. And, you know, my guess is in the end of this, Dave, the central banks, the banking system, the global banking system, the central banking system may well be headed for an all-out collapse. This is going to be interesting. Central banks can and do go out of business, go bankrupt, in other words. And the central banking system in the world today is so far overextended, it's not even funny. They're in much worse shape, generally, than our own Federal Reserve is.
Yeah, that I agree with. I mean, the stories out of Europe are horrific. But let's back up to something you said earlier. You used the word negative interest rates. Let's not presume that everybody who's listening to us understands what that means and what the implications are. So
sure.
Give your interpretation of what that means.
Well, you put your money in the bank. Say you have $10,000 and you put it in the bank and you expect to have a passbook account, say a savings account, that's going to pay you, well, you can normally, I don't know, you might normally expect maybe 1% right now at the high side on a small savings account. But instead of getting 1% positive return, you might end up, say, a year or two from now, getting a negative 1% return. So instead of adding money to your account, they'll be taken out a little bit every month and every year. So if you leave your money in long enough, theoretically, you'd end up with zero money. That's not a very heartening thing, is it?
But, no, it isn't. but it's conditioning us for what's
good. Yeah. This is happening around the world, and more central bankers are talking about going to negative interest rates. Of course, they say they're hoping to stimulate the global economy. There's not a prayer of a chance that they will. The central banks are completely out of ammunition. And there's open talk now about deflation. You might remember a few years ago that people fought me on the whole concept of deflation. Oh, no, it's going to be hyperinflation, blah, blah, blah. You know, everything's going to go to the moon. And I said, no, credit deflation is coming just as sure as the sun's coming up. And so we fought and wrestled and stuff, I did with a lot of people back, a few years ago. But now the central banks themselves are talking about deflation, and I'll tell you what, Dave, they are running scared. They're running scared. Deflation is the only thing that the central banks have no tools to counter.
What does that mean? Let's contemplate that for a moment.
Well, with inflation, when in an inflationary climate, the central banks have a number of policy tools that they have used, mostly interest rates, but they have other types of tools that they work with the Treasury and with other large banks around the country, and they can jockey interest rates and reserve requirements and stuff like that up and down to impact the economy. If the economy is growing too fast, well, they can slow it down. If it's growing too slow, they could speed it up by lowering interest rates and making money more easily available. They can grow the money supply, in other words. But in a deflation, it's like a spiral. It's tied to the price of goods, but it really is mostly tied to debt. And as people can't pay their debt, as companies can't pay their debt, as countries cannot pay their debt, the price of debt goes down and the debt bubble shrinks. And when that happens, people that can't pay off their debt all of a sudden start selling off assets so they can pay their debt back, that is. And that causes more debt deflation because as they sell assets, the debt that's with it gets liquidated as well. And as the money supply, as the debt bubble decreases in size on a global basis, that's what deflation is all about. Mostly, it will reduce prices as well because assets are getting sold. That's not universally true, but that's generally true. But we don't say deflation is what it is because prices go up or down. It's about debt, and it's about whether debt is being liquidated or debt is being increased. And right now, unfortunately, since the last debt crisis we had in 2007-08, the debt level around the world today is much, much greater because banks have figured out a way to loan money to countries, to global corporations, to people through things like student loans, for instance. Car loans has just gone through the roof. And all this big debt bubble out there is just sitting on the edge of a pen, just waiting to pop. And the banks right now, the central banks and the big banks, are like starting to sweat it because they realize that there are no tools to mitigate deflation. Once it starts, can't get rid of it. That's what happened in the Great Depression. It was a deflationary period. And once the market crashed, the central bank was out of control. They had to let it go. Just let it go to the bottom, and it did. And it was a horribly ugly time.
Well, I totally agree. What you just said reminded me with regard to the things like the student loan bubble and the general debt. Did you see the movie The Big Short?
I did.
Were you Amazing. Shocked that they were able to give us as much truth in that movie as they did, particularly the last 5 minutes where they implicated Hank Paulson and the government, knowing full well they were going to cover these losses years ahead of time?
Well, I know, and you know that to somebody like you and I, we see a message in that movie that's very clear because we've been following this stuff for a long time, right? And we knew all the bits and pieces going along, what was happening. We watch a movie like the Big Short and go, aha, aha, all the way through we're going, oh, look at that. And we see the people telling this story that seems to be pretty true. But to somebody who is clueless to the whole thing in the first place, they look at it and they conclude, It's just a script. It's just a movie, right? And so it's fiction. And they get a completely different message out of it. Absolutely incredible. But you're right. How did they get away with being so bold? It's just kind of laid out like that. Well, some of us got it. Most of the country went in one ear, picked up speed, and went out the other side.
Let me tell you what someone told me. They watched the movie. We talked about some of the concepts. And I said, there's a movie that actually laid blame where it belonged. And there was a marriage of corruption between the banks and the federal government. They knew darn good and well what was coming, and they knew the taxpayers were going to be on the hook and bail them out. And the person I talked to said, I didn't get that at all. And I started quoting the last 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I said, not only did they tell you what happened in the last 5 minutes, I said the last line of the movie on the screen, not spoken, but on the screen, said that the CDOs came back in 2015, which means more of the same. We're headed for another crash. And yep. The answer I got was, well, Dave, you know, that was only at the end. They didn't talk about it throughout the movie. And I said, why do you think they had to put it at the end? That's the only way the censors would allow it in there. Do you agree with my assessment or not?
I think so.
I swear I had this discussion. Mm-hmm. I had this discussion, and I'm still scratching my head. Does it matter whether the revelation comes in the beginning, the middle, or the end?
Well, not really, but you know, the whole sense of the movie supported the conclusion.
Yes,
it did. I mean, that was you know, that was the, what do you call it, the coup de grace, the big finale.
Well, the people I talk to in the know, let's compare notes. There has been no real housing recovery. It's been artificially propped up. The stock market's ready to go, and now the student loan debt is ready to explode. I mean, what's your take on all this, Pat?
Well, as I said, deflation has to do with contracting debt. And the debt bubble has been inflated to record levels again. The credit derivatives market is bigger than it's ever been in history.
Yes.
And any small prick of the bubble is going to collapse the whole thing. Now, you know, we've been looking for that Lehman Brothers moment for, honestly, probably 5 years now. Hasn't happened yet. But right now, the banks in Europe are cratering. And even Deutsche Bank, the largest bank in Germany, which is the largest influence in the EU, Deutsche Bank is, I forget exactly how much they're down. It's like something like 40% in the last couple of months.
Yes.
And people are looking at this. They're asking the question already in Europe, is this going to be the Lehman Brothers moment for Europe? And believe me, if a bank like Deutsche Bank goes belly up, or just even has a whiff of it, even just a hint, if people think they start a whisper campaign like they did with Lehman, and all of a sudden nobody would loan money to them again. And if that happens to some, you know, some big bank like Deutsche Bank, it's gonna just put too much stress on the whole system, and it's gonna freeze up. It's kind of like, I liken it to losing the oil in your motor of your car. If something happens and your plug drops out and you're driving along at 75 on the freeway, that's the speed limit in Arizona, and all of a sudden the oil drains out of your engine, your motor's going to freeze up. First, the friction is going to freeze it. It's going to swell, heat up, whatever. And once that engine block locks, once the pistons lock up, your car just stops. It could stop violently even, but it stops. And the oil is like money in the banking system. If money doesn't flow between banks to banks, and you know, big corporations to big banks and so on, if money stops flowing, the economic engine will just freeze up. That's what happened in a kind of a small way back in 2008. Things froze up when Lehman Brothers went belly up all of a sudden, and then Bear Stearns bit the bullet. man, nobody wanted to give money to anybody. They said, we're keeping our cash. We're not loaning it out because we want to make sure we get it back tomorrow morning. We're just not going to loan it out tonight. And so the whole credit machine across our country especially, but across Europe as well, the engine froze up because the oil wasn't moving. And that's what's going to do it this time, too. If money stops flowing, it's going to be at least short-term curtains for the economic system because you cannot operate without money flowing, pure and simple.
Along those lines, and we'll probably get interrupted by the break before we get through this concept, but 2 days ago I paid $1.63 for gas here in the Phoenix metropolitan area, which is unbelievably cheap compared to where we've been.
Yep.
But I also know, Pat, that middlemen require a little bit of oil markup in order to move products. Is this why the Baltic Dry Index, which is the best measure of how goods are flowing in the world, is at record lows and are below 300 now?
Well, I believe it works in parallel. The Baltic Dry Index, of course, doesn't account for oil because that's a liquid, not a dry product. The Baltic Dry Index has to do with dry things like iron ore, like coal, wheat, grain, stuff like that.
But you need the liquid to move the solid stuff.
That's right. But the liquid needs to be moved to move the solid stuff. And right now, the world is so awash in oil that, and this has never before happened, been a condition that happened in history, but there have been several times in the last 2 months where every ship on the Atlantic Ocean was docked up in a port somewhere. In other words, there was not one ship at a particular time moving on the high seas to deliver oil to one place or another.
Wow.
That's never happened before. And somebody's going to say, why don't they quit drilling oil? I mean, why don't they quit pumping so much oil and maybe it'll drop some of the supply? Well, they kind of like to do that, but that's not really the problem. The problem is that demand for oil is way off. That's because the economic activity just isn't there. If it was, they would be demanding more energy. But it's a rat's nest, isn't it?
It's frightening because I hate to... this is going to be the ultimate fear-monger comment, but this is how food shortages get started, isn't it? Other than droughts?
Well, in this country, I'll tell you, I study this quite a bit, because I have an agriculture background. I think you know that. We
yes.
first met down in Yuma, wasn't it?
Yes,
looking
well.
At the agricultural community down there. I'm very sensitive to agriculture. And what's happened in America with driving farmers and ranchers out of business for the last 25 years, and with things that are like what's happening in the San Joaquin Valley in California, where over 1.2 million acres have been forced out of production by stupid water regulations from Washington and these eco-fascist groups. America's ability to make food is so drastically reduced right now compared to even 20 years ago, Dave. It's not even funny.
Let's hold that thought right there, Pat. We're going to go into break.
Sure.
Because I know where you're going with this, at least I think I do. So let's make sure we start right here with our ability to make food, and the San Joaquin Valley is a great example. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll return with Pat after a word from these sponsors.
All right, for this week's Ranger Gear Review, did you know that hackers and government agencies can scan your RFID personal identity details through the air invisibly using an RFID scanner that reads the chips that are increasingly on driver's licenses, passports, and credit cards? Merely by walking near an RFID scanner, which may be hidden, by the way, you can have your personal identity details stolen without your knowledge or consent. My name is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I launched Ranger Gear to be able to offer solutions for problems just like this. We came up with RFID blocking sleeves that interfere with RFID scanning attempts and block them so that no one can steal information off your credit cards, driver's licenses, or passports. You just slip any credit card or passport into one of these sleeves, and it immediately blocks the RFID scanning. It can't get through it. It's like a bulletproof vest against RFID signals. These RFID blocking sleeves are infinitely reusable, they're durable, they're portable, lightweight, almost weigh nothing, and you have to use them now when you travel to protect your identity and your personal security as well. We've got them on sale now, a pack of 10 credit card sleeves and 2 passport protectors. All of them block RFID 100%. They're available now 10% off by using discount code DAVE at rangergear.com. Again, just use coupon code DAVE at rangergear.com and you'll save 10% off this RFID blocking sleeve pack, which contains 10 credit card sleeves and 2 passport protectors. I really can't emphasize this enough. Anywhere that you travel right now, if you have these RFID chips embedded in your cards or passports, you are being scanned and tracked without your knowledge. But you can block that using these RFID blocking sleeves right now. RangerGear.com, use discount code DAVE to save 10% today.
Well, you've heard it here, RangerGear.com. Good stuff. We talked about it in the last hour. Also, we talked in the last hour about your need for precious metals in the midst of a declining and possibly and probably a faltering economy. You're going to want to convert your worthless cash that you will not be able to get out of the bank, and you can avoid these negative interest rates. At the same time, if you hold gold and silver and other precious metals, the value is likely to go up tremendously. So tomorrow, call Steve Quayle at Renaissance Precious Metals. Find out what kind of deal he has for you. And act now, folks, because gold is starting to go up again after a big lull. You need to act now to keep the price within reasonable ranges. 406-586-4842. Again, Steve's number to call in the morning, 406-586-4842. Wanted to give a quick mention again about Bob Griswold and ReadyMadeResources.com. I falsely mentioned that he's on the air next week. I meant to say the 28th. Bob is on in 2 weeks. We have my good friend Roger Landry on next week. And, boy, that's going to be a hot show, and we'll tell you about it a little bit later. But Bob Griswold, you need survival supplies. If you're a beginner or if you're an experienced prepper and you feel that you need some things to complete what you need to get through what could be coming, and when products don't move, folks, and we're hearing, we're talking with Pat about this right now, when products don't move, you're going to wish you had some of these supplies at ReadyMadeResources.com. Go to the website, look at it after the show, and then call Bob tomorrow with your questions at 1-800-627-3809. Again, Bob Griswold's number at Ready Made Resources is 1-800-627-3809. Well, our special guest, authored a book, Technocracy Rising, has a newsletter. He's got a great website. He's got a lot of stuff going on that you need to know about, and that's Pat Wood. Pat, let's take a moment before we jump into where we left off, and let's tell people how they can follow your good work and get a copy of your book.
Well, this is so easy. It's just technocracy.news. It's not .com. Technocracy.news. And technocracy is spelled T-E-C-H-N-O-C-R-A-C-Y. They can find everything there, my old articles on the, from August Forecast and Review. And they can find a link to buy the book, Technocracy Rising. And they can also, of course, get it on Amazon.com. They get really fast shipping if they get it on Amazon. Amazon is an amazing delivery service. They also have a Kindle version. If people like electronic readers, it's a little bit cheaper than buying the physical book. But that's it. Very simple. Everything's consolidated now.
Well, that's it's good stuff. It's we were an advertiser for Technocracy Rising, the book, when it first came out. It's met with rave reviews from my listening audience. I highly recommend it. Pat, let's go back to where we left off. We were talking about the fact that nothing could be moving, and we've all that negative stuff we laid in. Let me have you pick it up right there.
Well, yeah, the problem is that the global agricultural movement has greatly consolidated in the last few years, and most of the production and at least most of the distribution is controlled by just a few companies now. And at the expense of American acreage going out of production, that is ranchers being driven off land, the cattle population has gone down, the livestock population has gone down per capita. The amount of acres in production producing food, like in the San Joaquin Valley, which, by the way, is the richest agricultural area in our country, It has produced over the decades incredible amounts of food for the United States. Well, what's going on is our food production has decreased. Imports have increased from places like Mexico, from Chile, from Argentina, from Brazil, even from China. And we're dependent now, thanks to the globalist, the globalization process. We're dependent on foreign food, which is absolutely stupid to you and I. Would talk about a security interest? This should never have been allowed to happen, and yet it did. So the great danger, Dave, is if ships stop moving, and if all of a sudden the international commerce just kind of takes a hiccup and the engine freezes, America is going to be in a position where food is going to become potentially very scarce, because these farmers just can't go back into business if demand picks up again. They're locked out by law from doing things where they used to farm and where they used to ranch. They can't get at them again. And so we have a limited supply, and we have hungry people. And this is not a good recipe. I'm not making any prediction out of this. This is just not a good recipe for a successful, security-minded America. And I'll tell you quite honestly, this has reminded me of what happened in Ukraine back in 1932 and 1933, when the means of producing food were completely removed from Ukraine. And what this whole period was killer resulted in, like, somewhere between 2 and 7 million Ukrainians died from starvation. And they called it Holodomor, Holodomor. Yes. And what that means is terror famine in Ukraine. And it was a famine genocide. And I'm not saying that's going to happen here, but there is a precedent in last century where this was used against a nation to completely decimate the population of the nation. It just crushed them. And using food as a weapon is well known to, the socialist/communist/Marxist mentality. They're not beneath doing something like that. And we just never, America, it should just never, ever allow itself to get into the position where we can be dictated to because of food and lack of it. We should never do that. But nevertheless, here we are. We have a risk here. We have a risk.
Are you familiar with Executive Order 13603?
I'll say by number, no. I don't do very well with numbers. What's the title?
National Resources and Preparedness Act.
Okay.
And Obama basically nationalizes everything to do with food based solely on his say-so, no input from Congress. In fact, to activate this executive order, you do not even need a pretend emergency. You can just do it on the president's own volition.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean everything, Pat. The food in your pantry, the garden that you have out back, any seeds that you own, any vehicle that transports food, food products, or food tools comes under the ownership of the government when this is activated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any thoughts on why Obama would have done this back in 2011?
Well, I can, and I'll tell you again, the large picture here is technocracy. It is not a political coup, Dave. We talked about this before. It is not a political coup. It's an economic coup.
Yes.
This is what it was designed to be from the get-go, back in the 1930s when it was started out in 1932. It was defined as an economic system that would completely replace capitalism and free enterprise. It would be based on an energy-based currency rather than on supply and demand that we know in America, that made America great. And as an economic system, what Obama is doing makes perfect sense. Taking over the economic system. Well, the important part of that is food. Important part of it is energy. An important part of it is water. You know, the whole total surveillance society that's happening right now with all the eavesdropping, spying, and now James Clapper, the director of National Intelligence, just recently said that that you can expect that the intelligence community will eavesdrop on your smart home appliances, just like we've been saying, Dave, all along. The smart grid was really just a ruse to get into people's homes to spy on them on what they're doing. Now James Clapper has said, he's a head intelligence guy in our nation, has said, yes, we may well use smart grid to spy on Americans. Well, the whole purpose of this massive data gathering on American citizens is not to just break down, it's not a political thing, it's not just to break down privacy, although it does. It's to put a monitoring system in place so the global elite can use it as the ultimate marketing machine. They want to control 100% of the means of production and consumption. Micromanage everything. And just like any engineer, any good engineer knows, if you build a factory, it doesn't matter what it makes, what comes out, goes in one end, what comes out the other end, you build a factory, you have to have a monitoring system in place in that factory to know what's going on at all times. It's just called a monitoring system. And you want to know if some assembly thing breaks somewhere or something, you know, isn't going fast enough or whatever, that monitoring system is supposed to alert you so that you can make mid-course corrections. That's what all of this data stuff is all about. Obamacare is not about your health. It's about your data. Common Core is not about education. It's about the data that's collected from the students, or I should say off the students. And, you know, you add up phone calls, you add up, all the emails and stuff that are being grabbed up, all of the commercial data that's available, virtually everything you purchase is being put into their grist mill. All of this amounts to one gigantic monitoring system that can be used by the global elite to perform their social engineering desires. Pure and simple. It's an economic coup. And nobody's looked at it like that, I dare say, except me. There may be some others. But I've been crying foul on this stuff, as you know, since the late 1970s when we wrote Technocracy, Trilaterals Over Washington, when Anthony Sutton was writing with me.
Mm-hmm. I remember
we
that
said
well.
It back then. It's an economic coup coming, guys. This is what they said. They're going to create a new international economic order. And we documented it 6 ways to Sunday. A lot of people listened to us, but most people laughed at us. The global elite scoffed and, you know, mocked us, even had, skits on, sitcoms like Barney Miller, you know, they had that one skit that mocked this guy that broke into the Trilateral Commission's office. And, we struck a nerve back then for sure, but the general public did not listen, and they're still not listening because technocracy is the ultimate epitome of the new international economic order. And these nutcakes have survived all of the political battles that we've had because they never were part of it in the first place. It's just been a sideshow for us, you know, for people, you know, fighting, because if you're fighting a political fight, you'll never look at them. You'll never see them. And that's what's happened. And here we are.
Well, that's not surprising, though, Pat, because money is the great driver behind politics. It all revolves around money.
It is. Politics has kind of been a necessary evil for these people. But I will hasten to add, even back in the 1930s, Dave, they wanted to summarily dismiss Congress. They wanted Roosevelt, when he became president, to declare himself dictator to implement technocracy. And they said simply, just dismiss Congress. We don't need them. They hated politicians, and they still do. The only reason they're using them, the politicians have become the useful idiots to the technocrats. That's all they are. They're puppets of the technocrats. And if they didn't want them here, if they could just summarily dismiss Congress and dismiss all of the republic form of government that we have, they would gladly do it and just take over and run everything themselves. They're well on their way.
What does it mean to the bottom line for us? I mean, when I think of technocracy, I think of my inability to continue living and supporting my lifestyle, which means a huge drop in energy consumption. What is this going to mean at the end of the day? Give us some concrete views of what life will be like, how much energy reduction will we go through, and so forth.
Well, basically, it means you won't have a lifestyle, in my opinion. You won't have a lifestyle, and you won't have the funds to pay for the lifestyle, because you will be micromanaged into just doing exactly what they intend for you to do, which is produce wealth for them. Not for you, but for them. If you can imagine an America where there's no private property, let's just say the right to own private property is just removed. That means you can't own a business, you can't own real estate, you can't own development property, you can't even own your house. You'll have to rent a house because somebody else is going to own it. If we didn't have private property in America, we have no America, Dave. And yet, that's exactly what they want to do. They want to completely destroy the concept of private property. That's part and parcel of technocracy. It's written in, by the way, and that's written into the Agenda 21 document that was produced in 1992 as an expression of technocracy, in my opinion.
In your opinion, is this what underlies the federal takeover and destruction of ranchers' ability to make money off their land, and the same with farmers, particularly in the West?
Funny you should mention that. Exactly so. That's exactly why it's happening. It's a resource grab. This isn't happening just in America, Dave. This is all around the world. These people are grabbing up resources all over the world and putting them into, you know, some type of a global trust for the common good. You know, they call that for the common good, right?
The communist good, you mean?
Well, yeah, the communist good, yeah. The technocrats good, at least. And you know, the national land grabs that have been happening here with the BLM and driving ranchers and stuff off the land is absolutely insane, but it continues to march on at breakneck speed. Just yesterday, Obama announced another 1.8 million acre land grab in Southern California. These people are unplugged. That's why almost 40% of the West now, I think it's over 40%, is owned by the federal government. It's astounding to see the map on how much land the feds own in the West. Ranchers are feeling the pain because they're the ones that are getting economically hurt. And so they're at the end of the rope. They have nothing to do but to protest and just cry out in whatever way they can. And by the way, I think it was a very big strategic error for the Bundy crowd to take over the refuge up in Oregon. At least
the same. Yeah.
the very minute that the Hammonds checked into jail, they should have left. They should have just said, okay, we're not needed here, and they should have gone home. But now they have played into the Fed's hands completely. And call it naiveness, I don't know what you could call it, but there was a headline story that I'm certain has come out as a result of that protest, and that is, and I have a headline on Technocracy News right now on this, the latest article on the front page. This, the title is, that I gave it, U.S. seeks to redefine terrorism rules to include anti-government protesters. And they actually, in this article, they actually reference the refuge takeover. So when they start creating terrorist a list of terrorist organizations, anybody that's found supporting those, just like overseas with ISIS and stuff, anybody found supporting those groups will face a minimum of 20 years in federal prison. Now, I'll tell you what, this is just over the top. It's absolutely over the top. The guns of Navarone, so to speak, have been slowly refocused on American patriots. And that's not to say at all that the Bundys were right in what they did up in the refuge and stuff. I think it was just strategic error. On the other hand, I don't think they were guilty of anything more than probably a misdemeanor of having occupied that building for any period of time. But they did, and you know, the feds are just throwing the book at them now, and who knows how long they'll be in jail. We just don't know. But they have played right into this mentality that the government is trying to do this for some time now. And now they have an excuse. They're pushing forward with it, and they're going to try to introduce legislation into Congress that will actually give the executive branch the power to do this. And if our Congress is stupid enough to give the executive branch this power, the Constitution is on its way to being completely smoked.
Let me ask a question about interpretation. How far does the giving aid and comfort to domestic terrorists, their language, not mine, go? Let's take ourselves here. We're the media, and if we have Ammon Bundy on, or as I did, Shauna Cox on,
yes,
and I let them tell their story, and I sound like I'm the least bit sympathetic, am I at risk of going to prison for 20 years?
Possibly. You know, I wouldn't say automatically you are a member of the media in that sense. I don't know that they would necessarily pick on you, but you see, it's at their discretion. If they wanted you, they'll make up an excuse to get you. That's about the bottom line. But we do know that there is a number of warrants out for arrest of people who were merely present at the Bundy Ranch 2 years ago.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah, and so this isn't that they did anything. It didn't do anything. They were just there. You know, and that has been enough to spark warrant arrest for these people, and we think they're doing the same thing with what happened up at the refuge in Oregon as well. There were some people that came and went because there were people coming and going all the time up there at the refuge. The FBI didn't stop them. You know, even the occupiers were allowed to go out. They shopped at stores in town. They went to meetings. They went to public meetings and stuff. They were not curtailed by the feds whatsoever up until the time that they busted the whole thing wide open with the death of that one guy from
Lavoie Finicum.
So now they're saying if you merely visited and then walked away the next day, and we'll see, I think probably another couple of weeks we'll see all the indictments that come out, you know, the warrants that are issued. But we're almost certain at this point that there's going to be some of those people that just came and went that were identified, and they're going to be used as examples to put them in jail as well.
They have to do that, and I say the feds have to do it, because here's why. If the ranchers and the farmers stand up to this tyranny and they're able to show any success in a pushback, that would slow down the progress of technocracy, wouldn't it?
Absolutely would. It would blow it white. It would blow it sky high. And I will say, even though most people, in principle, agreed with what Ammon Bundy was standing for, they disagreed with his technique, with his strategy to get there. And now,
I agree. He opened the door up. He opened the door up to be arrested. I think he was no more guilty of anything but non-criminal trespass.
Exactly.
However, you know the feds. Mountain out of a molehill, federal crimes are notoriously heavy laden with length of prison sentences, and that's what opened the door for them to be taken. They should have gone to private rancher land, constructed a makeshift facility and conducted their operations from there, because the feds would have had a lot more difficult time dealing with them.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I know.
And now, I don't think Ammon Bundy will ever see the light of day again.
He may not, but the point is he's neutralized now. He's not going to be of any use to anybody. And what he might have done on the outside, he will never be able to do because he's not there anymore. And he'll be locked up, and he thinks, maybe he thinks that he'll become a martyr somehow for the cause and that people will rise up to help him, but I got bad news for him. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I don't either.
I'm not saying I wouldn't like it to happen, but he's gonna require mega doses of money to fight this thing through the court system. And I can't see groups coming up and saying, hey, we'll donate $1 million and stuff like that to cover his foolish actions. So it may be a difficult road for him, and I don't want to diss him because I do really, in principle, I really believe what he was doing was right. But strategically, he never should have stayed there after the Hamas decided they were going checking into jail again. And it became a disaster in the end of it. And a lot of other people are probably going to go to jail that did nothing more than just go up there and visit and say hi, maybe take them some groceries, some, you know, whatever, just to visit them, family members, stuff like that, they may well get tagged and put in jail themselves.
What I really find tragic in this whole thing is the aftermath. Now, the reports I'm getting out of Burns, Oregon, and I'm getting emails on this every day from people that have been in contact with me, they're locals, they're being treated like criminals. There's a martial law presence right now going on in Burns, Oregon. In other words, you want to talk about overkill? The feds are making it clear you will not stand up to us over land rights issues. Hey, Pat, I just noticed the clock. We're just about out of time. And I once again, I want to give you a way to get people to follow your good work on your website, as well as how to order your book.
You betcha. It's technocracy.news. The easiest thing to get to in the world, just type in technocracy.news. And I find out if you forget that, if you just type in technocracy in a search engine like Google, you will find us on the front page, on the first page that comes up, technocracy.news. They'll find the book, Technocracy Rising. The subtitle of that book is The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. And if you want to connect all the dots, folks, that's the book to get. There's no other book in the world today that's on the market that you can buy that connects the dots like Technocracy Rising does. And we've had scores of people give us feedback that that's exactly been the case. The dots are connected so that you can see who the enemy really is. And it's not who you think it is.
Well, it's certainly not the front and center politicians. It's
nope.
The murky economists behind the scenes. Final question, and we've just got a short amount of time. Are you familiar with the 1970s movie Rollerball?
I do. I remember that, yes.
James Caan, C-A-A-N, I think it was either 75 or 76, and it was a world run by six corporations. You had no land rights. You didn't even have a right to retain your spouse if a higher official wanted your spouse. And, boy, was that a prophetic movie for our time?
Oh, indeed it was. And there are many movies like that, too, since then, that kind of detail one aspect or another. And where he got his inspiration from, I don't know. But, yeah, Rollerball was one of those movies that was just absolutely prophetic.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
Well, Pat, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us, filling in here at the last moment. We'll get Debbie Bacigalupa on at a different time. But, Pat, as always, you were terrific, and we look forward to having you back, and continued good luck with the book.
You bet. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Pat Wood, ladies and gentlemen, and technocracyrising.news. And it's good stuff. Read the book not once, but twice, as I like to brag, and it really tells you, if the globalists get their way, and this goes right into the Bundy Ranch, right into the Hammond Ranch, if they get their way, it's not just going to be ranchers and farmers that are suffering this, it's going to be all of us. We'll be back in hour number three with Katie Whalen, and she has a special guest for the Health Report, and at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by my old friend, Joshua Coy. See you in hour number three.